from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, trusting everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race.
Welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about folks who are killing the planet and folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, telephone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses. So please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio. And I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods up in a tripod, or sometimes if you bring your cell phone along, you can even do that. Whether you're in a tree sit or locked down at the road blockade, doesn't matter to me. If you have information, announcements, or comments for Earth First Radio, please keep that pencil handy and listen for the contact addresses later on in the show. All right, let's get right on into animal news here. We've got a lot of it. President Bill Clinton announced that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service plans to remove the bald eagle from the federal endangered species list. Quote, the American bald eagle is now back from the brink of extinction, thriving in virtually every state of the union, President Clinton said. Quote, I can think of no better way to honor the birth of our nation than by celebrating the rebirth of our proudest living symbol. In 1963, only 417 nesting bald eagle pairs were found in the lower 48 states. Today, an estimated 5,748 nesting pairs are alive. America was the first nation on Earth to pass a comprehensive law protecting endangered species, the Endangered Species Act, and once again we have shown that this landmark law works. Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt said the eagle was listed as endangered in all but five of the lower 48 states in 1973. 1995, the eagle was downlisted to threatened, and if the species is delisted, it will remain protected by the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would work with state wildlife agencies to monitor the status of the species for a minimum of 5 years. Some biologists at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and elsewhere fear delisting will allow developers to destroy bald eagle habitat in Arizona. Dr. Robin Silver of the Southwest Center for Biological Diversity said, you remove any enforceable incentive to protect eagles and they are gone. Only 50 nesting pairs of bald eagles live in Arizona, New Mexico, and western Texas. Public comment on the delisting is welcome until October 5th. Contact the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service website at www.fws.gov. The final decision is expected in July of the year 2000. And in response to a federal court order, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service designated 731,712 acres, about 1% of the state of Arizona, as officially protected critical habitat for the endangered Cactus ferruginous pygmy owl. The desert habitat for the miniature owl was set aside by the service last Wednesday. The Tucson-based Southwest Center for Biological Diversity petitioned to list the pygmy owl as endangered in 1991, following up with five successful lawsuits to get the species into the endangered list and its habitat protected. Karen Suckling of the center's executive director says the habitat designation includes a large stretch of the Middle Gila and Lower San Pedro Rivers and the heart of the urban sprawl zone in west and northwest Tucson. It also includes large areas next to the Poinas Irish National Wildlife Refuge, and the federal government is not allowed to permit, authorize, or fund any action which would adversely modify that critical habitat. This includes issuing grazing permits to the Livestock Industry, Clean Water Act permits to developers, and allocating freeway construction funds. Formerly common throughout southern Arizona, there are now only 40 known pairs of pygmy owls left in the state. Its preferred habitat, riparian forests and lush Sonoran desert uplands, have been decimated by dams, overgrazing, urban sprawl, and water diversions. Last Wednesday, Arizona Governor Jane Hull, a Republican, used her bimonthly radio program to attack the critical habitat designation. She complained that habitat protection might be a disaster for state trust lands. Obviously, she said, state land is one of the big resources that we want to use up. And an adult deer measuring just 20 inches high at the shoulder and weighing no more than 25 pounds has been confirmed through DNA testing to be a new species, making it the world's smallest deer, according to a recent study led by the Bronx Zoo-based Wildlife Conservation Society. And NPR's Allison Aubrey reports that an apparent declining number of horseshoe crabs found in the Delaware Bay. Scientists are conducting an annual survey and say more restrictive measures may be needed to stop the decline. The decline in the creatures means a decline in their eggs, which fuel thousands of migratory shorebirds which stop at the bay to feed on their way to summer breeding grounds. The crabs are used for bait. A clotting agent in their blood is used to test for bacteria in drugs. And the Center for Biological Diversity and a coalition of fishing and conservation groups filed suit in federal court in San Francisco against the National Marine Fisheries Service for failing to protect California's threatened steelhead trout. While NMFS listed the steelhead as threatened species under the Endangered Species Act, it has not yet outlawed the killing, harming, or harassing of the fish. Without such an order, the listing of steelhead under the ESA is essentially meaningless. Unlike the National Marine Fisheries Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has outlawed the taking of all threatened and endangered species under a blanket policy. National Marine Fisheries Service issued a separate ruling for each species, but has failed to do so for the steelhead trout. The coalition filing suit included the Alameda Creek Alliance, the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations, the Northern California Council of the Federation of Fly Fishers, and the California Sport Fish Protection Alliance, the Turtle Island Restoration Network, the South Yuba River Citizens League, and the Coastside Habitat Coalition in San Mateo County. While the National Marine Fisheries Service has illegally delayed the application of ESA protection, steelhead statewide continue to be killed by diversion of water from streams. Critical habitat to their recovery continues to be destroyed. The lawsuit documents abuses and fish kills which have occurred in over 30 streams, from Arroyo Grande Creek in San Luis Obispo County to the Russian River in Sonoma County. Water flows necessary for steelhead migration, spawning, and rearing are being diverted. From the Carmel River in Monterey County to the Yuba in Yuba County, interruption of stream flows resulting in large fish kills have been documented. From Gazos Creek in San Mateo County to Lagunitas Creek in Marin County, steelhead habitat has been bulldozed and degraded. Governor Gray Davis, a Democrat, committed $2.6 million in state funds last week toward the permanent protection of a wildlife corridor between the state's redwood forests and coastal regions. The nonprofit Save the Redwoods League responded by buying 3,800 acres of forested land from Eel River Sawmills between Humboldt Redwood State Park and the world's largest old-growth redwood forest and the Bureau of Land and Management's King Range National Conservation Area, the longest unroaded coastal area in the lower 48 states. The state's support for this project, coupled with a commitment to a broad range of donors and the Eel River Sawmill's responsiveness and patience, makes possible the protection of these sensitive lands so important to the wildlife that depend on old-growth redwoods and Doug Fir, said Kate Anderton, the league's acting executive director. The league says the properties will be owned and managed as natural resources by the Bureau of Land Management. Management strategies will be coordinated with the private owners on the corridor. The project is possible in large part because of the very long-term exemplary management of large ranches in the area. Private ownership and management of those lands has huge benefit for the values being protected through this conservation effort and will continue to be an important component of the corridor, noted Anderton. And from Idaho, we read that radio transmitters have been fitted on 230 calves in Idaho's Salmon Cobalt Ranger District to help biologists learn if wolves are attacking the animals. The transmitters, which will be used until mid-October, have a mortality sensor to allow biologists to locate dead calves. Once a signal is detected, biologists will try to locate the calf within 24 hours. Early detection may allow the biologists to find evidence of the cause of death. Cattle deaths and missing cattle in the area have increased since the Huerreño wolf pack established a territory within cattle grazing area in 1996. Deaths and missing cattle increased from an average of about 2% in 1994 to 3% in 1997, with 15.7% in 1998. Ranchers believe the increase is a direct result result of wolf reintroductions in central Idaho. The Nez Perce Tribe Idaho Wolf Recovery Program spearheaded the radio tagging project, which now involves the Salmon Chalet National Forest, Wildlife Services Idaho Wolf Recovery Program, Diamond Moose Grazing Association, Lemhi County, University of Idaho U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Lemhi Cattle and Horse Growers Association, and Defenders of Wildlife. The Southwest Center for Biological Diversity, Trout Unlimited, the Rio Grande Chapter, Southwest Trout Sierra Club Rio Grande Chapter, and the Carson Forest Watch and Biodiversity Legal Foundation filed suit against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list New Mexico's state fish as an endangered species. In February 1998, the groups filed a comprehensive status review and petition demonstrating that the Rio Grande cutthroat trout has disappeared from 95% of its range and is continuing to decline due to logging, overgrazing, water diversions, and competition and hybridization with exotic game trout. Although the Fish and Wildlife Service agreed the species has declined by 95%, it declared that the extensive petition did not present sufficient information to warrant further study of the trout's condition. Instead, the agency concluded that a hodgepodge of unimplemented draft conservation plans adequately protect the trout. It also illegally counted extirpated and hybridized trout as populations in order to make the species status look marginally better. Also, the Southwest Center and Christians Caring for Creation filed suit on June 16th in Denver to force the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list four imperiled Utah, New Mexico, and Texas species under the Endangered Species Act. The Deseret Milk Vetch occurs only in San Pete and Utah County, Utah. The only known population has been reduced to 5,000 to 10,000 individuals growing in an area of less than 300 acres. It is threatened by livestock grazing, urban sprawl, and road expansion. The Pecos sunflower is dependent on desert wetlands. It is known from 22 sites in Cibola, Valencia, Guadalupe, and Chavez counties, New Mexico, and from two sites in Pecos County, Texas. It is threatened by wetland draining and destruction, livestock grazing, and highway maintenance. The Sabata bladder pod is known from four locations in Zapata and Starr counties, Texas. It is threatened by urban sprawl, highway construction, increased oil and gas activities, and, of course, overgrazing. The Devil's River minnow is limited to three stream systems in Val Verde and Kinney counties, Texas, and one drainage in Cahuilla, Mexico. Its historic range was much larger and less fragmented. It has declined dramatically in the last 25 years because of groundwater pumping, dams and water diversion, overgrazing, and non-native fish introduction. And in a petition submitted by Sam Wright, a former biologist with the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife, has resulted in a commitment by the National Marine Fisheries Service for a year-long biological status review of seven species of fish in Puget Sound. The review is a first step to determine if these fish need protection under the Endangered Species Act. It is the first time the agency has been asked to conduct a review of a West Coast fish species other than salmon. The seven species are part of a more expansive petition sent to the agency last February to examine 18 Puget Sound species, the largest number the federal agency has ever been asked to consider under the Endangered Species Act. The seven are the Puget Sound populations of Pacific herring, Pacific cod, Pacific hake, walleye, pollock, and brown, copper, and quillback rockfish. Although until the early 1980s there was a commercial Puget Sound hake fishery, and until recently there was a limited fishery for herring and their eggs by both tribal and non-tribal commercial fishermen in Puget Sound, the remaining species are targeted by sport fishermen. The status review, scheduled to end next February, would make recommendations on whether or not an ESA listing is warranted. The agency makes a formal proposal to list any of the seven species. It would have another year to make a final decision to commit to a formal listing. The agency said it would work closely with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and Treaty Indian Tribes in western Washington during the status review. A spring 1999 survey of 2,090 California sea otters indicates the population has declined overall by a little over 1% since last spring's survey, when 2,114 otters were found. The surveys were conducted cooperatively by scientists of the U.S. Geological Survey, California Department of Fish and Game, and the Monterey Bay Aquarium, with the help of experienced volunteers. They covered about 375 miles of California coast from Half Moon Bay south to Santa Barbara. There is what the USGS calls a disconcerting decline in the group characterized as independence, which includes all adults and subadults. That category of sea otters declined nearly 5% from 1955 in spring 1998 to 1858 in the spring of 1999. Spring surveys of California sea otters have shown a steady decrease from a high of 2,377 sea otters counted in 1995. This continuing pattern of decline is of grave concern, especially given our lack of understanding of the cause. The information we gather from these surveys will be used by federal and state wildlife agencies in making important decisions about the management of this sea mammal, said Jim Estes, a USGS scientist with the Western Ecological Research Center in Santa Cruz. Scientists do not understand why the sea otter populations are declining, said Estes. Sea otter deaths, as indicated from carcasses found on beaches, have increased over the same period that the survey numbers have declined. During 1998, 213 stranded sea otters were reported, the highest number ever. With critically endangered Kemp's Ridley sea turtles still washing up dead in record numbers, Texas Governor George Bush has been asked to create a no-commercial fishing marine reserve along the coast of Padre Island in South Texas, where hundreds of these and other species wash up dead every year during shrimp season. Please take 30 seconds to email a message to Governor Bush at gwb@georgewbush.com. That's gwb@georgewbush, all one word, .com, and tell him that sea turtles are drowning in the nets of shrimp fishers by the hundreds. I urge you to sign an executive order and create a marine reserve that is off limits to commercial shrimping along the coast of Padre Island, Texas. And you can also write the governor at Office of the Governor, P.O. Box 12428. That's 12428, Austin, Texas, 78711. That's Office of the Governor, P.O. Box 12428, Austin, Texas, 78711. Millions of acres of public lands in Alaska, Arizona, Nevada, and New Mexico, which have been used for military training, may be transferred to the Department of Defense, according to an alert from Forest Guardians. These public lands include critical habitat for the endangered Sonoran pronghorn antelope, hundreds of thousands of acres of wilderness study areas, and national historic sites. The DOD has a very poor record of protecting natural resources and should not gain control of these wild lands. Please contact the Council on Environmental Quality and tell them that the Department of Interior is the proper manager for this land, not DOD. Please call George Frampton, Chair of the Council of Environmental Quality. His number, 202-456-6224. That's 202-456-6224. Robert Vaught, or Vaught, I don't know what it is, supervisor of the Colville National Forest, recently announced the Z Slumber timber sale, located on the West Salmo Priest Wilderness area and south of the Canadian border, which includes logging the steep riparian slopes of Slate Creek, a bull trout watershed. Forest Service completed extremely limited bull trout surveys and lost other surveys, allowing them to claim there are no bull trout within Slate Creek. Forest Service adopted the alternative with the most aggressive logging and the maximum amount of new road construction in this area, which is also home to several sensitive wildlife species, including gray wolf, woodland caribou, and grizzly bear. For further information, contact the Cattle Range Conservation Group. Their number, 509-775-2667. That's the Cattle Range Conservation Group, 509-775-2667. Let's move right on. Defenders of Wildlife announced last Thursday it will compensate an Arizona rancher for livestock losses from reintroduced Mexican wolves released over the past year. After confirming that the wolves had killed some of the rancher's cattle, the conservation group pledged to make sure the rancher gets the fair market value of his losses. Quote, "Our goal is to achieve wolf recovery, not to make ranchers pay for it," said Defenders President Roger Schlickenson. "We are committed to ensuring the return of this critically endangered species to its natural habitat, but at the same time we're willing to put our money where our mouth is. Defenders will shoulder the burden for when these rare incidences occur." On June 22nd, an injured calf was found with wounds consistent with a wolf attack. The calf is expected to recover. However, the previous week, a wolf team biologist discovered the mostly consumed remains of two domestic calves and a partially eaten adult cow that died after its hind leg became entangled in a barbed wire fence. Defenders will be compensating the ranch for one cow, two calves, and either the vet bills or the valued appreciation for the injured calf as part of its ongoing program of compensation for wolf attack. In 1998, about 55,000 blue sharks were killed to supply the world's appetite for shark fin foods, the Environmental Defense Fund reports. Most of these sharks were caught accidentally by fishing vessels netting tuna and swordfish. Crew members then amputate the fins of the sharks and throw the bodies back into the sea, then sell the fins to supplement their low wages. The Environmental Defense Fund criticized the failure of the National Marine Fisheries Service to control shark fin amputation in the Pacific. Until 5 years ago, most sharks caught by longline gear were released alive, but as a result of the growing demand for shark fins in Asian markets, the practice of shark finning has increased 22-fold. National Marine Fisheries Service does not allow finning in the Atlantic Ocean, the Gulf of Mexico, or the Caribbean. In addition, the United Nations recently adopted an international plan of action to protect sharks, and this emphasizes caution until scientists better understand shark ecology, said Dr. Stephanie Freed, an EDF policy analyst. Allowing fishermen to continue killing tens of thousands of sharks a year through finning is irresponsible. National Marine Fisheries Service and the Western Pacific Fisheries Management Council should take action immediately to reduce the killing, said Dr. Rod Fujita, an EDF marine ecologist. And the designation of critical habitat for threatened and endangered species is under attack by Congress and the Clinton administration. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has published notice in the Federal Register announcing their intent to streamline the rules governing designation of critical habitat. Also, the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works is scheduled to mark up the Domenici Bill, Senate Bill 1100, aimed at delaying the critical habitat designation. Without protecting habitat, species will not be able to expand their populations and get themselves off the endangered species list. Most species are on the list are there in part because of habitat issues, says Mike Centauri of the Defenders of Wildlife. If you'd like further information, contact Brian Vincent at 530-265-3506. That's 530-265-3506, or email to wafcca@nccn.net. That's wafcca@nccn.net. And the most recent scientific data tracking the California spotted owl in the Sierra, El Dorado, and Lassa National Forests shows that the spotted owl population is dropping by 7 to 10% a year. In response, conservationists plan to ask the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to consider listing the California spotted owl as threatened or endangered. Concern is growing because of the Forest Service's management alternatives for the Quincy Library Act, which will significantly increase logging on the Lassen, Plumas, and parts of the Tahoe National Forests. For additional information, contact Scott at the Sierra Nevada Forest Protection Campaign. His number, 916-442-3155. That's 916-442-3155, and he's at extension 206. And I'll try to get through a couple more here. The Journal of Soil and Water Conservation has published an article by Dr. Joy Belsky, staff ecologist for the Oregon Natural Desert Association, and A. Matsky and S. Olsemann, summarizing over 140 peer-reviewed scientific papers on the effects of livestock grazing on western rivers and riparian areas and the species dependent upon them. More than 100 research papers cited in the review found that livestock grazing reduced water quality, increased sedimentation, altered stream hydrology, compacted and disturbed riparian soils, denuded stream banks, reduced spawning rates and survival of salmon and other cold water fish, and led to the extinction of riparian wildlife. Although some grazing techniques were found to be less detrimental than others, all were damaging compared to non-grazing. Nearly 100% of the research papers reported that livestock damaged western streams and rivers. A few papers not reporting adverse effects suggested that the studies had been too short or that other factors such as floods or rodents had interfered with the results. No positive effects of grazing were found. If you'd like to see the full study, check out the website www.onda.org/rippaper. That's rippaper.html. Once again, the webpage, www.onda.org/rippaper, rippaper.html. And on the 15th of June, the Center for Biological Diversity filed a formal notice of intent to sue the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for failing to list and protect 10 imperiled aquatic species under the Endangered Species Act. The agency determined that all of the species warranted listing under the ESA, but did not list them because of alleged higher priorities. Many of the species have languished in this state of geopolitical purgatory for over a decade as their habitat and numbers continued to dwindle. This suit will include the Pecos Acemineia snail, the Gila spring snail, the Roswell spring snail, the Chupadera spring snail, Coster's Trionia Kegel's map turtle, the New Mexico hot spring snail, the Columbia spotted frog, the Oregon spotted frog, and the California tiger salamander. And I'm afraid that's about all we have time for right now. We will get back to more stories, of course, next week here. If you'd like to get your news, announcements, or comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send those letters, donations, CDs, cassettes, whatever, to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. For more in-depth news and information about the Earth First Movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Earth First Radio is broadcast live on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Thursday at 8 p.m., or you can listen to Earth First Radio anytime on your computer on the World Wide Web. Set your browser to radioforall.web.net. That's http://radioforall4.web.net. Radioforall.web.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need is downloadable free on the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast by a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. If you found us on the web, ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening. Please tune in again, and we're going to listen to an Alice DiMicelli song here off a CD called If a Tree Falls. This one is called Defend the Earth.
Something to defend.